Lawrence Clifton Jones moved to the Deep South at a time when it was dangerous to be a black man in Mississippi. He chose to make the move to do what some considered to be impossible, build a school for children of color in rural Rankin County. He would face cultural and financial struggles and miraculously survive a lynching in pursuit of his dream. This is the story of the man known as the Little Professor of Piney Woods. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark, all the troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Noblesse oblige is the belief that those who have been given much have an obligation to those who are less privileged. If you've been blessed with good fortune by virtue of birth, luck, or opportunities, you feel kindness and generosity should be shared with those who need it. Dr. Lawrence Clifton Jones, the founder and longtime president of Piney Woods School in Rankin County, Mississippi, was a fervent believer in noblesse oblige. As a well-educated man of color born during the Reconstruction, he had opportunities many of his race had never known, especially those in the South. That's why Dr. Jones dedicated his life to creating opportunities and advancing education for children of color in rural Mississippi. This work, his calling, almost cost him his life. Lawrence Clifton Jones was born in 1884 in St. Joseph, Missouri. His mother, Lydia, was a seamstress. His father, a porter. His parents instilled an early love of reading and education in him. That love of education was a family trait. Lawrence Jones's uncle was the founder of the Woodstock Manual Labor Institute, opened in Michigan in 1844. The school was strategically placed because Michigan had progressive rights for African Americans compared to other states. Before the Civil War, African Americans were prohibited from learning to read or write. This was an effort to ensure that they would submit to white people who enslaved them and believed in white supremacy. Following the war, millions of freed people of color would face limitations of their legal rights as Jim Crow laws of segregation grew severe in the South. Access to education was a prime example of separate and unequal in the South, with white schools receiving the bulk of funding from the state and government, as black schools would find no support or improvements. The results would be a lack of access to school and a decline in the quality of education available to children of color. Having been born during the Reconstruction era, Lawrence Jones would have traveled a very different path had he been born in the Deep South. But in Missouri, he had access to choices, even if those options meant his family would be separated. John and Lydia Jones were adamant that their son attend a school where he could thrive. Lawrence displayed advanced levels of reading and learning, and was particularly passionate about music and poetry. He was excited to learn, but he and his parents realized that by the time he was in high school, his local school district wouldn't be able to accommodate his needs. He was no longer being challenged, and his family knew they had to make a change. His aunt and uncle urged Lawrence's parents to send him to school in Marshalltown, Iowa, where he stayed with family and attended Marshalltown High School. In 1903, Lawrence Jones would become the first black student to graduate from that high school. Jones continued his education, attending a business college before enrolling at the University of Iowa. He worked many jobs to pay for his education, rising every day by 4 a.m. and returning to his room no earlier than 9 at night. His hard work and determination paid off when he graduated in 1907 with a degree in philosophy. While attending the University of Iowa, Lawrence Jones met Grace Morris Allen, who was 5 years older than him and had been hard at work to advance education, having single-handedly launched an industrial school in Iowa. The two met when Jones was delivering a speech at a church, sharing concerns about the conditions of blacks in the South. Grace Allen shared Jones's passion for education and was invited to speak about her knowledge of deplorable conditions in the education system for people of color in the South. Lawrence Jones would later say that during that speech, he saw Grace Allen as articulate, vigorous, and bright-eyed, a woman who inspired him. Lawrence was taken by her and determined that their paths would cross again when he improved his life. In 1908, Lawrence Jones, who had been greatly inspired by the life and work of Booker T. Washington, was presented with a generous job offer to work at the Tuskegee Institute in Alabama. To the surprise of friends and family, Jones turned the job down. He had learned more about the high illiteracy rates of people of color in the South, specifically the 80% illiteracy rates in rural Rankin County, Mississippi. Jones felt his opportunities in life were blessings, and those blessings were rare for people of color in America at this time. His sense of noblesse oblige would lead him to challenging yet rewarding work, advancing the education of people of color in rural Mississippi. For the next 2 years, Lawrence Jones set about transitioning his life to the Deep South. He would write that he first chose to teach in Arkansas to adjust to a new climate and atmosphere. He then moved on to the Deep South, taking a teaching job at Utica Institute near Jackson, Mississippi. Lawrence Jones found his transition to the South to be tough. He described himself as being the black man white people didn't trust simply because he was black and educated. And he was the black man that many black people didn't trust because he wore fancy clothes and he talked a little funny. He worked hard to earn their trust and get to know people, allowing them to get to know him and his mission. While he was teaching at Utica Institute, Jones was approached by the leadership of St. John's Baptist Church in Rankin County. They asked him to lead their efforts to establish a school after their attempt to start one for the black children in their county had been suppressed by white people. Jones was familiar with Rankin County. He knew the challenges people of color had faced in trying to establish schools for children there, threats of violence from white supremacists, and the overwhelming obstacle of funding. Lawrence Jones didn't view this situation as a threat. He viewed it as his calling. His overall goal was to create a school where children of poor black farmers and former slaves could be educated, a safe place for those children who did not have the means or access to school. As Jones wrote in his book, Piney Woods and Its Story, he made the move to Mississippi to answer the, quote, cries of my people for the opportunities of education which were being denied them. To say his dream would have humble beginnings is an understatement. In 1909, when Jones boarded a train for an area known as the Piney Woods, he traveled light. In fact, when he stepped off the train, he had a few textbooks, a few clean shirts, his diploma, and a total of $1.65 in his pocket. And as he put it, a lot of faith that this would work out. When the train pulled into the station near Braxton, Mississippi, Jones stepped off and began walking. He ended up walking to an area covered with cedar trees. When he sat down to rest under one of those trees, he realized this would be a perfect place to start what he would call Piney Woods Country Life School. His first day of class was held outside under those cedar trees with three children attending the school. He used a tree stump as his desk as he met children outside each day to educate them. Soon, a local man would give him an abandoned cabin and a little patch of land, which allowed him to move his little classroom indoors. Day after day, Lawrence Jones worked hard to spread the word about his school and his intention to educate the sons and daughters of Black sharecroppers. Some of the very first students to be educated at Piney Woods Country Life School were children and grandchildren of former slaves. Before focusing on academic subjects, Jones focused on teaching life skills in an effort to ensure each child would be able to support themselves. Tuition for the school was paid in the form of goods and services from the students' farms. It was truly a community effort. In 1912, there was a key addition to Piney Woods Country Life School, Grace Allen. That summer, Lawrence Jones had returned to Iowa for a visit and a fundraising mission for Piney Woods. There, he reconnected with Grace Allen. The two fell in love, and by the end of the summer, they were married, and Grace joined Lawrence when he returned to Piney Woods. Grace and Lawrence would have a family and work together to grow the school. Lawrence would say that Grace's vision and talent for teaching and management would be the key to their success. By 1913, the state granted Jones a charter. Grace and Lawrence Jones were operating the school and teaching, and soon five teachers joined them to educate the growing number of children who wanted to attend Piney Woods. Lawrence's gift for fundraising would be an important element in their success. With the support of local donors and donors from Iowa, the first building was constructed at Piney Woods, which served as a classroom and a dormitory for students at the boarding school. Lawrence Jones was often on the road, traveling across the states and the country to share his vision and his mission for children of color and raise funds to help sustain Piney Woods. More and more students traveled down a rural Rankin County road in mule-drawn wagons, and they would arrive at Piney Woods to begin an education that some of their parents never imagined would be an option for them. As they arrived, they would bring vegetables and dry goods, their form of tuition. By 1914, students from southern Mississippi, Florida, and Louisiana would be enrolled at Piney Woods. Their parents would say they were inspired by Lawrence Jones, now known as the Little Professor of Piney Woods. Jones would find support and even donations for Piney Woods from unexpected friendships. Keep in mind, he was running a growing boarding school for children of color in rural Mississippi during the Jim Crow era, in the very state with the highest number of racial terror lynchings in the country. White supremacy was considered the norm in Mississippi at this time, yet Lawrence Jones would write that his dealings with whites in Mississippi were generally cordial and positive. He'd even found a close group of Southern white friends who donated money and their time and skills to help expand Piney Woods. They believed in and supported his work. But that group of white friends was very small. In 1918, Lawrence Jones would come face to face with those who did not support his work. He would face the reality of racial terror from those who believed he was out of place. He would live to tell the story of the day he experienced what could only be described as a miracle, the day he survived an attempted lynching by an angry white mob in Mississippi. In 1918, a friend of Lawrence Jones invited him to attend a revival at his church in West Mississippi. Jones may not have been a pastor, but his friend invited him because he was a powerful speaker and he felt Lawrence had an inspiring testimony of good things happening for people of color in Mississippi. Emotions were running high across the state and across the country during the First World War. Rumors were rampant, including one rumor in Mississippi that Germans were meeting with people of color in the state to encourage them to rebel against whites. This rumor was spreading when Lawrence Jones went to speak at his friend's church. As Jones would later write, over the course of the three-day revival, he used words and phrases that were drawn from military life, telling the congregation that life is a battle and they needed to fight back against ignorance, poverty, and superstitions. A group of white men were outside of the church and heard Jones speaking. They became enraged, began to spread the word about this black man who was speaking at this church and challenging and inviting people of color to rise up against and fight white people. On the third day of the revival, an angry white mob arrived at the church around noon. They asked for him by name, and when Lawrence Jones stepped forward, a few of the men grabbed him, held him down, and placed a noose around his neck. Jones was dragged from the church and taken about a mile up the road to a field with one tree, what's known as a lynching tree. He was forced to stand by that tree on a heap of trash and wood. And as the mob grew larger, Jones realized what they planned to do. He was going to be burned on that trash heap and then hung from that tree. Lawrence Jones said he never forgot the sound of the horses and mules arriving in the field, carrying more white men who wanted to be there. They wanted to take part in this lynching. The crowd grew so large that it was hard for Lawrence Jones to hear what happened next. He heard shouting, a man trying to quiet down the crowd. He shouted again and again and again, "Let's make him talk before he burns." The man stepped forward again and taunted Lawrence Jones, telling him to make a speech before he died. And that is what Lawrence Jones did. He stood with a noose around his neck on the pile where these men planned to burn him alive. And he told these men about his work and what he was doing in Mississippi, why he had chosen to come to the state. Jones was shocked that the men let him continue to talk, but he figured as long as he was talking, he was alive. He told the men about arriving in Piney Woods with a few books and $1.65 in his pocket and started a school using a tree stump as his desk, teaching children under the trees until people started donating to help the school grow. He spoke of his fondness for his treasured friends, white and black, who worked with him at the school and donated to Piney Woods on an ongoing basis. Lawrence Jones realized he couldn't pause. He had to keep talking. So that's what he did. He told the men that he was a hard worker and he was training up kids who would make their communities stronger and better. How white farmers had donated land and lumber to help build the first building on the school grounds. The more he talked, the more names he mentioned. Lawrence Jones felt the mob of the white men around him back off. The tension was still there, but it wasn't as bad as it had been when that noose first went around his neck. Finally, he pleaded with the men to let him live, not for himself, but for his cause. When Lawrence Jones shared all he knew to share to save his life, the mob grew silent for what felt like a lifetime. He noticed a man move from the crowd and move to stand next to him by the tree. This older white man turned back to the crowd and said, "I believe this man is telling the truth. I know the white man whose names he's mentioned. He's doing fine work. We've made a mistake. We ought to help him instead of hang him." The next thing that man did shocked Lawrence Jones even more. This white man, who just moments before had joined in this angry mob that had been shouting that he was going to burn and hang. Well, that man took off his hat and told the men that they were going to take up a collection. They passed that hat and raised a gift of $52.40. Dale Carnegie would share this story in his book, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. He recounted meeting Lawrence Jones and hearing his incredible story of survival. Carnegie asked Jones if he hated the men who put that noose around his neck, had led him to that lynching tree. Lawrence Jones replied, "I have no time to quarrel, no time for regrets, and no man can force me to stoop low enough to hate him." As Lawrence and Grace Jones continued to travel and share the news of what was happening in Piney Woods, they found growing financial support for the advancement of education for people of color, for children of color in rural Mississippi. People from all walks of life were joining together to support this boarding school and supporting education for all children. Lawrence and Grace had an exhausting touring schedule, which took its toll on Grace. In 1928, she was feeling tired and run down. She was sure it was just the traveling she had been doing, wearing her down a bit. But Grace would contract pneumonia and die. Lawrence Jones vowed to continue their work in memory of his wife, who had labored so diligently for the sake of Piney Woods Country Life School. Throughout the 1920s, Piney Woods would grow and expand programs at the boarding school, including musical training. By 1929, Jones heard that there was a need for a blind school for Black children. He collaborated with Martha Louise Fox, a pioneering educator of the blind, to open what was called the Mississippi Blind School for Negroes at Piney Woods School. Martha Fox was the teacher and principal. Students in this school were held to the same standards as Piney Woods Country Life School. They were expected to learn skills and work hard for their tuition. They contributed to the construction of school buildings, learned how to can vegetables, and helped develop agricultural programs. Lawrence Jones and Martha Fox struggled to find support for this new school for the blind at Piney Woods, but they came up with an idea to help raise support and awareness. They organized the Cotton Blossom Singers, a blind quartet who would inspire many a person to donate to the work of the school for the blind. Following their graduation in the early 1940s, the Cotton Blossom Singers would become world-renowned artists, recording as the Five Blind Boys of Mississippi. Donors were moved by the groundbreaking program for the blind at Piney Woods. Once the students reached high school, they were moved from the school for the blind and placed in class at the traditional high school. The Piney Woods program for the blind was one of the first in the country to move blind students into the mainstream and prepare them for a lifetime of success. It helped remove the stigma about blindness that existed at this time. One woman in particular was a fan of the school and their unique program, Helen Keller. She visited the school, and in 1950, she spoke before the Mississippi legislature to appeal for funding for blind students. Later that year, the Mississippi School for Blind Negroes was moved from Piney Woods to Jackson, where it would be integrated with white blind students. Along with the innovative Cotton Blossom Singers and Five Blind Boys of Mississippi, the musical roots at Piney Woods run deep. The school is featured on the Mississippi Blues Trail with blues man Sam Myers, who was legally blind, having attended the school where he learned to play trumpets and drums. Blues guitarist Jody Williams also attended the school and would go on to work with Bo Diddley and Howlin' Wolf. Pineywood School would be the birthplace of the International Sweethearts of Rhythm, the first integrated all-women's band in the United States.
When you're feeling low and you don't know what to do, just stay in the groove, let nothing bother you.
During the 1940s, the band featured some of the best female musicians of the day. By the 1950s, Lawrence Jones would become Dr. Jones when he received honorary doctorates from four colleges and earned an honorary Master of Arts from the Tuskegee Institute. He made regular appearances on radio to tell his story and the story of Piney Woods. He would make about 12 speeches a week, traveling more than 50,000 miles a year to fundraise and encourage education for all children. But it was an appearance on This Is Your Life in December of 1954 that surprised Dr. Jones and led to nationwide awareness and support for Piney Woods School.
This Is Your Life, a program for all America. And now here he is, Mr. This Is Your Life himself, Ralph Edwards.
This Is Your Life was a popular program. It featured host Ralph Edwards surprising a guest of the week. He'd then take them through a retrospective of their lives. This all played out in front of a live studio audience and included appearances by colleagues, friends, and family of the guest of the week. In 1954, the Hollywood Rotary invited Dr. Jones to speak in L.A. Their invitation was part of the plan to get him to be in the studio audience for This Is Your Life. Here's the moment Ralph Edwards walks up to Dr. Jones, who's sitting in the audience, and he learns he's the guest of the week.
I wonder if you'd be so kind as to read the front page, see whose life this is tonight. What does that say there, sir?
It's Dr. Lawrence C. Jones.
Who's that?
There might be another one. I don't know.
It's no one but you, sir. This is true. It is you. Dr. Lawrence C. Jones, known as the Little Professor of Piney Woods, Mississippi. This is your life.
Lawrence Jones was reunited that day with his high school principal and a college friend who spoke of his determination and hard work and praised him for his decision to pass up those lucrative job offers when he graduated and follow his mission to educate children in Mississippi. He would also be reunited with the Reverend William C. Dixon, who was one of the first children to attend Piney Woods School in 1909. In those early days when the class met outside, here's Reverend Dixon sharing about those early days under the trees outside at Piney Woods Country Life School.
Well, when the weather was chilly, we would build a large bonfire. We'd roll our logs together around it and hear the classes. And then we would hew out the benches at recess time. And Professor Jones taught us without asking for a penny.
Yes, sir. It must have really been quite an experience, boys and girls of 15, say, coming to start school like that.
Yes, sir, because they were unable to read or write.
And of course, in return, some of you pupils used to bring your teacher a sack of vegetables now and then, didn't you?
Oh, yes, we did when we were able to do so. And it was a saying among the people that Professor Jones ate dried peas for breakfast, drank water for lunch, and he swelled up and burst for dinner.
Thank you, Reverend William C. Dixon. Thank you.
Two of the earliest friends Lawrence Jones met in Jackson, Mississippi, were Mr. and Mrs. W.F. Mahaffey. They were at the first fundraising meeting for Piney Woods School and would later join the Board of Trustees. Here's the Mahaffeys on This Is Your Life speaking about the fundraising meeting and what happened days later.
You remember you told us that the children did not have clothes warm enough to sit out in the cold and wait their turn for classes.
Many of you give donations that day, but the big thrill is when the mill owner, John Webster, speaks up. And what did he say, Mr. Mahaffey?
He said Lawrence Jones had the most gumption and determination of any man he ever saw. He says, Lawrence, I'm going to give you 10,000 feet of lumber to build that first schoolhouse right here in our community. And as you need credit, I'll see that it's extended to you.
The show's host, Ralph Edwards, was so moved by the story of Piney Woods and Lawrence Jones' dedication to education that he ended the program that night with a challenge to viewers. He asked each person watching to send at least $1 to support Piney Woods Country Life School. That challenge led to more than $750,000 in donations to Piney Woods. Dr. Jones used that money to establish the school's endowment fund. Dr. Lawrence Clifton Jones dedicated his life to education and the students at Piney Woods. He led the school until 1974, just 1 year before he passed away at the age of 92. His legacy continues. Piney Woods School continues to educate children, with 98% of graduates attending four-year colleges. Quite a life and legacy, considering the humble early days of Piney Woods and how close Dr. Jones had come to dying back in 1918 when that mob took him to a lynching tree. Dr. Jones would never be free of the memory of that day, but he would write that it's what happened when he returned to the church where he had been taken by that white mob that helped bring him peace when those memories returned. You see, when those white men returned Lawrence Jones to the church, he walked in and was greeted by a group of men who had known real struggle, who feared they would never see Lawrence Jones alive again. They had watched countless black men be taken away by a white mob and lynched. They remained inside the church that day and bowed their heads to pray for a miracle. When Lawrence Jones walked back into the church, with white men saying he was doing good work, they knew they had witnessed that miracle. As Dr. Jones would later say, this event in his life was his hope and his reminder that there was a path forward toward his peaceful and meaningful coexistence with African Americans and whites in Mississippi. That they could work together to ensure children were educated and had opportunities for a brighter future. This was why Dr. Jones and countless faculty and staff members, volunteers, and supporters pressed on during those difficult early days at Piney Woods Country Life School. Dr. Jones said they would labor and sing in their hearts the words of the poet Henry Van Dyke. Let me but find it in my heart to say, when vagrant wishes beckon me astray, this is my work, my blessing, not my doom. Of all who live, I am the one by whom this work can be best done in the right way. Then shall I see it not too great nor small to suit my spirit and to prove my powers. Then shall I cheerful greet the laboring hours and cheerful turn when the long shadows fall at eventide to play and love and rest, because I know for me, my work is best. The modern Piney Woods School is known as an academic oasis in the state of Mississippi. 300 students now attend the school, hailing from more than 20 states, Mexico, the Caribbean, and several African nations. Legacy defines Piney Woods. Modern-day administration and staff uphold that legacy and always remind students of the story of Dr. Jones, why the school exists. In fact, every graduating class pays a visit to a wooded area on the campus of Piney Woods where they visit the graves of Dr. Jones and his wife, Grace, both buried facing the log cabin where the first classes were held back in 1909. As each graduating class visits, they pay their respects and unite in prayer and song, honoring the past as they look to a bright future, thanks to the passion and persistence of Lawrence and Grace Jones. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. You can see photos of Dr. Jones and his Piney Woods Country Life School in the show notes at southernmysteries.com. As always, I do hope if you enjoy the show that you'll rate and review wherever you're listening to help other people discover Southern Mysteries. Thanks for listening.